Good morning to all. It's 9 a.m., and I call this meeting of Academic Research and Student Affairs Committee to order. Winter, can we please have roll?
Chair Arriscada.
Here.
Vice Chair Downs.
Here.
Regent Batista. Regent Brown.
Present.
Regent Del Carlo.
I'm here.
You do have a quorum.
Thank you all. I know this flag is small in stature, but large in our hearts. We could all stand. Oh, and here comes one right now. We're going to be saying the Pledge of Allegiance in about a few minutes. For those able, please rise. And Regent Downs, please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Chair Downs. Before beginning today, we will take a moment to recognize that here in Nevada, we stand on the land of the Washishu, the Washo, the Numu, the Northern Paiute, the Nuwi, the Western Shoshone, and the Nuwu, the Southern Paiute. We take a moment to recognize and honor their stewardship that continues into today. With this recognition, we state an intention to rightfully include their voice and respect them as the 27 sovereign tribal nations of Nevada. Prior to moving on to public comment, I'd like to say, for those who would like to call in and offer public comment, please dial 669-444-9171 and enter meeting ID 933-55-68-7402 and passcode 555-5555. So we're going to start with public comment from some of the system office throughout the state. Is there any public comment in the system office in Las Vegas?
There are none at this time.
Thank you. Is there any public comment at the Reno System Office? Does not appear.
Not at Reno.
Perfect. Is there any public comment here at GBC? Even better, we're flying. SCS, is there any public comment on the phone?
None at this time.
Thank you, SCS. Well, let's move over to consent items, agenda item number 2. Consent items will be considered together and acted on in one motion, unless an item is removed to be considered separately by the committee. Any consent items that need to be removed by the committee? None stated. I'd like to make an introduction for a motion.
Motion to approve.
Thank you.
Second.
Regent Downs. Thank you, Regent Brown. Any questions, comments, discussion? None stated. All in favor signify by saying yes or aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. All right. We're going to go over to agenda number 3, which is the organizational unit eliminations by UNLV. Here at UNLV, we request approval of the eliminations of the following organizational units, which is Applied Geophysics Center, the Center for Gaming Research, Center for Mechanical and Environmental Systems, Energy, Material, and Interaction, and High Pressure Science. And today from UNLV, we are going to be represented by...
Good morning, Chair. Barb Roberts, Acting Senior Vice Provost for Academic Affairs. She's at the System Administration Building in the South.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to get that official. Ms. Roberts, please continue.
Good morning, Chair, Vice Chair, Regents. Thank you so much for having us today. For the record, my name is Barb Roberts. I'm the Acting Senior Vice Provost for Academic Affairs. Thank you so much for having us. Chair Arriscada, I took it on on good authority that I needed to wear comfortable shoes today. So I am wearing my daughter's sneakers. They were the only pair that kind of matched the rest of my outfit. So thanks again. We are presenting an item today to eliminate 5 centers. They were found by the Council on Centers, Institutes, Museums, and Laboratories, who then worked with the deans in each one of these units to process the elimination paperwork. Affiliated faculty from these centers have retired or are no longer interested in participating in the work of the centers.
Thank you very much, Ms. Roberts. Are there any questions or comments from the board? I do have a few. First and foremost, strong compliments to the thoughtfulness to review the academic offerings that have long stood somewhat stagnant. Was there a monetary savings to any of the canceled programs?
There, most of these centers had no activity for quite a long time. The most recent activity was the High Pressure Science and Engineering Center, but the grant funding was terminated in 2019 for that center, and there has not been any recovered funding for that particular center.
So no additional funds have been coming in since 2019?
That's correct.
Thank you. For approximately how long were the faculty designated to these course studies?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that question?
The faculty were designated, how long were the faculty teaching these classes prior to being utilized elsewhere? Have they been well attended classes or programs?
So these centers actually did not necessarily have courses related. They were research centers, and so the faculty members were conducting research through these centers, but most of them had retired. 3 of the faculty members retired, and so the research was no longer being conducted. One unfortunately passed away, and the other faculty member is back to teaching courses.
You just seamlessly answered my 3rd question. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Any questions, discussion? May I introduce a motion for on the table?
I'll make a motion to approve.
Motion approved by Regent Del Carlo.
Second.
Regent Brown. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Wonderful. Thank you very much, Ms. Roberts. I do appreciate the clarity that you all just provided.
Thank you, Chair Arizcada.
So we're going to move over to agenda item number 5. This is the program change for the PhD education policy, organizational leadership, and higher education at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And it looks like Ms. Roberts is utilizing those comfortable shoes today. So, Ms. Roberts, please continue.
I am indeed, yes. Thank you, Chair Arizcada. Again, Barb Roberts, Acting Senior Vice Provost for Academic Affairs, for the record. This program change was initially submitted as...
I skipped one. Ms. Robert, I apologize. This was my complete oversight. I just overlooked agenda item number 4. Hold on 1 second.
It's okay. I was going with it.
Yeah, you were. Thank you. If I can just get the nice, kind consideration from the committee and go back to agenda item number 4. That was my oversight. I was getting a little antsy here, but we are going to go back to the organizational unit proposal for the Center for Water Intelligence and Community Health at UNLV. This is for possible action, and thank you for everybody for your indulgence, but please, let's start back on number 4. Please, Ms. Roberts, continue.
Okay. Again, Barb Roberts, Acting Senior Vice Provost for Academic Affairs, for the record. We are extremely excited today to be able to request this new Center for Water Intelligence and Community Health here at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. We are very excited knowing that the huge impact that these studies for wastewater had during COVID and how important they were during that time. And we know that this is going to continue to improve medical advancements in the field the longer that we and the more in-depth that we are able to study wastewater, not just in our region, but it could have far-reaching impacts. And so today we are asking for approval to establish the center. for Water Intelligence and Community Health within the College of Sciences.
Thank you very much for that very succinct description. Are there questions from the board? Come on, the committee members. Regent Brown.
Thank you so much. Regent Brown, for the record. I just want to say, since I've been a regent, I've had the opportunity to go to the College of Science and meet with some of the researchers that did some of that work during the pandemic. And they explained to me how they were able to, you know, really find outbreaks in the water. And you could see the rise in some of the different bacteria that they were showing. And so I think it's just really important. And plus, we all know that water is such a big scarcity for the South that I think it's really imperative that we understand water as best to our ability. So I think it's very fortuitous that you guys are being proactive to create something like this. So just wanted to say thank you.
Regent Brown.
Great points. After reading the attachment, oh, I'm sorry, Regent Downs? After reading the attached documentation, this is a great project. I mean, this is great. Because right out of the chute on the first page, the ambitious statements pioneering Las Vegas for the first wastewater to drinking water system. And as you stated in the attached material, utilizing its PPP model, what is the approximate time frame for this implementation?
I am going to turn to Dr. O, who happens to be in the room and will be the lead on this project, and ask him to come to the mic for that answer.
Thank you.
The implementation would be immediately. We are ready to go. We have our set of investigators and students who would be participating in this effort, and we are actively looking at a number of these different topics listed in this proposal.
Perfect. Doctor, if you hang out there for a second. For the genomic and the proteomics, the study of protein and the relating to the full set of the chromosomes, how will establishing this type of a system provide the university community with state-of-the-art technology and competitive rates?
Oh, right. So we will be able to run these types of studies for public health, for private organizations, for university academic folks. So these rates would be competitive relative to what we're seeing across the United States. But also, really, it's just the actual studies that we can conduct with these proposed activities. So I hope I answered that question.
No, you did. And actually, you kind of somewhat answered it for a nice segue into my next question. On the second page under goals and objectives, subsection II, it states research, and beginning on the bottom of the second page, the briefing states, to improve mass spectrometry technology to identify synthetic opioids, sedatives, stimulants, and other novel list of drugs and abuse. So this is a huge benefit of the Las Vegas area, but expand on the process for the implementation and for what reason.
Absolutely. This is another powerful component of the project. We're looking at pathogens in the water. We're looking at chemical analytes that range from everything from fentanyl to something like cocaine. And we're able to do this by improving the sensitivity of the instruments that are currently here and also in the process of being acquired.
I'm going to ask you to elaborate just a little bit more on the statement of the proposal has the capabilities to improve the monitoring and the interventions of the opioid epidemic of schools or at schools?
Yes, so this is an ambitious direction of the program also, where we can provide this service to universities and to schools in the state. This is an initiative, a type of initiative that has been practiced in a number of different states in the country. For example, New Mexico's governor instituted a statewide testing of all high schools. So we want to be ready. So if in the event that there is a major initiative to run this type of testing across all high schools in the country, we will be good to go.
That's great. This is a great program. One of the items I truly compliment is the confidence in the dean's office, that the dean's office has stated in the materials committing $330,000 a year for the next 3 years, other than in the final paragraph on page 6, which states a few items. If you could explain the expected 10 times return on the investment over that three-year program.
That's right. So we are actively applying for federal grants and also seeking out private investors in the program. And currently, we have a number of different grants that have been reviewed, and they look quite positive in terms of funding probability.
10 times return on that investment of $330,000 is impressive.
I would say at least 10. I would say at least 10 times.
That's great. This is wonderful to hear. So on page 7 under year 3, the program is already factored for in $33 million. In federal grants through COBRA, EPA, and URISE. Have these three grants been secured?
They have not, but one of the grants has been reviewed, and we're, I think, today or tomorrow waiting for our study section, NIH, to respond.
Great. Are there any more questions from the committee? Oh, there you go. Please, Regent Brown.
Hi, Regent Brown for the record. I just wanted to let you know that NIH will actually be in Las Vegas, hosted nice. At your college on October, it's the Sunday, October 19th. So if you can't get an email, if you can't get a response to them then, I suggest you do it in person when they're on campus. I'll make sure you get an invite.
Thank you.
Well played, Regent Brown, well played. Are there any more questions, comments from the board or for the committee? None seen. Oop. Regent Brown, Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair. I just think it's fascinating that you're doing this, and I agree with my chair that water is our most precious resource, especially in the desert in the south. And I see the partnership's going to be with the Southern Nevada Health District, or not the Water District, also. And will you be doing anything with the WASH? I don't remember seeing anything in the paper about that, because I'd never heard of a WASH until I came down hiking to Vegas one time, and I thought that was a pretty fascinating concept too. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. We have done some studies with the WASH. We test the environmental control structures here that carry stormwater. That stormwater goes from our golf courses to Lake Mead directly. So we want to better understand how clean that water might be before it ends up in our finally in our drinking water system.
Okay, thank you. And this is just a wonderful new way to learn for students. So I appreciate you bringing this forward.
Thank you.
I agree with the sentiments of the committee. Are there any more questions, comments?
I'd move to approve agenda item number 4.
I second.
Thank you, Regent Brown, and followed up by Regent O'Connor. Any other discussion? None seen. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Or any opposed? None stated? Any discussion? Wonderful. Thank you, Dr. O. That was great information. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for reviewing this.
So we're going to slide over to agenda item number 5 this time. And we're going to go to the program change for the PhD education policy and the organizational leadership and higher education. And we are back up to the with the comfy shoes. Please continue.
Thank you, Chair Arascata. Barb Roberts, Acting Senior Vice Provost for Academic Affairs, for the record. We are presenting a program change for our PhD in higher education to a PhD in education policy, organizational leadership, and higher education. This was initially submitted as a name change, but due to a few curricular changes, we are now submitting this as a program change. We are adding a concentration and have changed a bit of the core focus to add some new courses to help align with the new focus of the degree. These changes are expected to help students prepare for their dissertations by allowing more focused coursework in their area of specialization.
Thank you, Ms. Roberts. Are there any comments, questions from the board? From the committee, excuse me. None seen. I just have a couple on. First of all, a strong compliment on page 2C, where it is the facilitating smooth matriculation into the doctoral program. That's great. That's the best way it should be. That's just a very thoughtful pathway for a PhD. And on section F, as in Frank, what is the minimal one-time fiscal impact?
I do not have that information in front of me. We can get back to you with that information.
Thank you. I should have said Foxtrot. But thank you very much for that. Are there any other questions, comments, discussion on the board?
Move to approve agenda item number 5.
Thank you, Regent Brown.
I'll second that.
Wonderful. Thank you, Regent Del Carlo. Any statements? None seen? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None stated? Please, let's continue. Thank you very much. I appreciate that one, Ms. Roberts. Let's go over to agenda item number 6. Here we go. Another one for possible action, which is a program proposal, PhD in multilingual education from the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And Ms. Roberts, please continue.
Thank you, Chair Arascata. Barb Roberts for the record. We currently have a Master's in Education in English Language Learning that would be a feeder for this program. This program is actually focused on preparing doctoral students to conduct research relating to the teaching and learning needs of students identified as English language learners in PK through 12 settings. They will be prepared to research or for teaching careers in higher education and as policy leaders in school districts and state leadership positions, and language specialists in various studies. Nevada, as I'm sure you all know, has been identified as one of the states with the largest proportion of students identified as English learners. So we are looking forward to strong enrollment in this program and ask for consideration for this to be allowed.
Wonderful. Questions from the committee? Regent Del Carlo.
I just have a comment, no questions. I really appreciated all the public comment we got on this from people within that department there. It's really nice when something gets supported. We hear, people against, but it's really great when so many from UNLV wrote in support of this. And it was really great to read these different public comments and how this program has affected them when they were going through school and then in their jobs as teachers, how important it is. And it just reflects where Clark County is today. I mean, it's such a diverse community. And I was born and raised in Nevada when, it was not diverse, let me just say that, in my lifetime. So it's just reflects where we are today as a state, and I appreciate you, and I'll be keeping up with where we are. So thank you.
Well stated.
Thank you, Regent Del Carlo.
Very well stated. Committee? Couple questions. On Section B, Bravo, Subsection Delta, the workforce needs in Nevada. It's reiterated in Subsection III, which is a doctoral program can prepare individuals, have been trained future leaders, enhance the pipeline of qualified educators in the critical areas. This is exactly one of NSHE's strategic goals. That was very, very well played. On page 9, the third paragraph from the bottom, it states there are no doctoral programs in the Mountain West region, in particular the 4 mentioned universities. What about schools or colleges or universities statewide, or excuse me, nationwide?
I am going to ask Dr. Joe Morgan to comment on that.
Thank you all. Joe Morgan, Professor of Special Education and Chair of Early Childhood Multilingual and Special Education, for the record. I was consulting with my colleague, Dr. Bengochea, who wrote the proposal. And nationwide, there are about 8 or 9 standalone programs that we know. Don't quote us on that, but there are about 8 or 9 nationwide. Oftentimes, these programs are embedded as sub-programs under curriculum instruction PhDs or other degree programs. So this is unique as a standalone program focused fully on multilingual education and supporting multilingual learners in schools.
Wonderful. Stay right there if you could, please, sir. What about, so the proposal displays that the cohorts could be bigger than expected, especially where it states it right there in the middle of page 10. What are your thoughts about the expansion of this program, or perhaps a time frame?
Can you clarify time frame for?
Let's say as the program continues to definitely gain momentum, time frame 1, 2, 3, 5 years, when do you see the cohorts enlarging or perhaps the interest continue to increase?
Got it. So in our department currently, we house a doctoral program that has about 50 candidates in special education. So our faculty are pretty used to running large doctoral programs with a lot of interest. So we have the infrastructure to be able to support that. I do note through some investment through the Clark County School District with ESSER funds, there's a large pool locally of folks who finished the master's in English language learning, about 300 folks with 50 currently in the pipe, who are currently finishing those graduate programs and looking for expanded doctoral opportunities to take on additional leadership roles. So we believe that we have a local pool as we get started and kind of learn about the implementation of the program and successes of it to pretty quickly pivot to marketing that for growth. We were conservative in our enrollment numbers to begin with, but we would expect by year 3 to 4 to be able to have clear data to be able to market the structure of the program, impact, and start to have graduates to go deeper recruitment regionally and nationally for the program specifically.
That statement of pivoting for your marketing, that's a great statement, primarily because once this really starts to have momentum, this program is going to definitely increase in size. But provide some clarity for me. On numerous locations throughout the proposal, a minimum conferred master degree must be with a GPA of 3.0 is required for entrance. But in the section III on the bottom of page 16, applicants are to have a 3.5 GPA. I just wanted to make sure that all of those GPAs are coinciding with one another.
Yeah, I have the proposal on my computer. We believe that is a typo, the 3.5. We started at a 3.5 and then exploring other doctoral admissions requirements in the college and university. 3.0 is pretty standard, and 3.0 brings it in line with the other doctoral program in our department. So we wanted to maintain consistency in the structure of those programs. So 3.0 would be the admissions requirement. The 3.5 is a line that would need to be edited.
Okay. So if this proposal is approved, the 3.5 GPA will be edited down to 3.0 for entrance?
Yep, 3.0 would, yep, 3.0 would be the GPA for admissions requirement.
Wonderful. Thank you much. May I introduce a motion on the table?
I'd like to move to approve agenda item 6 with the caveat that 3.0 would be the admission standard.
Thank you much. Is there a second? Second, Regent Batista. Thank you much. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Nope. Wonderful. Thank you, University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and Ms. Roberts. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Chair Arascada, Vice Chair and Regents.
Excellent. We're going to move on to agenda item number 7 once I get this back up. That's not it. Thank you for waiting, everybody. Here we go. So, number 7 is a program proposal which is a Bachelor of Music composition from the University of Nevada, Reno. And this is for possible action. And Provost Thompson.
Morning, Chair Escada, Vice Chair Downs, and members of the Board of Regents. For the record, my name is Jeff Thompson, and I serve as the Executive Vice President and Provost at the University of Nevada, Reno. The University of Nevada, Reno is requesting approval of a new Bachelor of Music in Composition degree. This program will address consistent student demand, aligns UNR with nationally ranked peers, and supports an accreditation recommendation from our last visit. The proposed program provides students with a comprehensive education in composition, including traditional electronic and media-based approaches, preparing them for graduate study and diverse professional degree careers. The Bachelor of Music in Composition expands access, improves student success, reduces equity gaps, and supports Nevada's entertainment and media workforce, and fosters creative research, while also advancing UNR's Wolfpack Rising plan by emphasizing applied learning, career preparation, and diversity. This program will allow students to study and complete works across all areas of composition, including electronic music, and will prepare them for fields like film scoring, game music composition, orchestration, and multimedia composition. The faculty in the School of Music already have the requisite background to teach the courses, and so we will not need any additional resources, whether faculty, class space, or labs, to bring this degree forward. We expect a modest increase in enrollment based on requests and demand, and also looking at workforce demands in the state. And the faculty are ready to go forward if approved. So with that, I would be happy to take questions.
Questions from the committee? None stated, except for me. Thank you, Provost Thompson. This is wonderful. And I'm going to go to that first, third, and fifth projected enrollment. Because reading through this, I was expecting big double-digit numbers. Because you all really illuminated the need for this program. But when I got down to that first, third, and fifth, it was kind of I was really expecting huge numbers. So, yeah, if you could please expand on that, that'd be great.
Thank you, Chair Escada. We are being conservative. I mean, this is we have an excellent School of Music and faculty, and we're just basing this on demand where they have been out in the schools and where students have asked. They're looking at what our offerings are now in applied music, music education, or Bachelor of Arts in Music, and there are a lot of students interested in composition, and so we're basing it on that. We do think we will have more students, but I'm trying to be careful.
Like, very thoughtful, now, appreciate it. But if those numbers are far above what is the conservative numbers in which is being presented today, will you all have the bandwidth to manage it?
In my background, my hesitation is far above. I'm not sure exactly what that means. Uh-huh. I mean, if these numbers were double or triple, yes, we can do it. If it's 10 times, then yes, we would need more resources.
Okay.
But somewhere in that range, it could be considerably bigger, and we could still cover it.
In the middle of, well, regarding the timetable, I want to talk about a little bit of a timetable that you all presented because it's a little convoluted here. Because regarding the timetable on section D delta, subsection III, which is the middle of page 5, are students currently enrolled in this academic program?
No, sir, they are not in this academic program, but they're enrolled in composition courses.
Okay. Because you all, looks like you all constructed the curriculum itself. This is an entire huge curriculum that you all just recently constructed. But an item that is evident throughout is a significant collaboration with the time spent in studios and on composition. Will there be any fee differentials attached to this program other than the one that's listed on the bottom of page 12?
There are no plans for fee differentials.
Awesome. Are there any other questions, comments, discussion from the committee? None heard.
Move to approve action or agenda item number 7.
motion by Chair Brown, by Regent Brown, excuse me.
I'll second that.
Second by Regent Del Carlo. Any other discussion? None stated? All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Provost Thompson. And you, too, are getting comfortable up there. Please, let's continue to the agenda item number 8, which is the program proposal for BS in Political Science. Provost Thompson.
Thank you, Chair Escada. For the record, my name is Jeff Thompson. I serve as the Executive Vice President and Provost at the University of Nevada, Reno. The University of Nevada, Reno is requesting approval of a new Bachelor of Science in Political Science that will provide students with advanced training in political analysis and quantitative methods. This degree complements our existing Bachelor of Art degree program by offering a quantitative pathway that includes calculus, statistics, and research methods with the study of political institutions and behavior. In addition, the program will attract quantitatively oriented students who might not consider a liberal arts degree, particularly those with strong science, technology, engineering, and math preparation. This program responds to a strong student demand and prepares graduates for high-demand roles in policy research, campaign analytics, government, and nonprofit sectors, as well as graduate study. And in alignment with the university's land-grant mission, the program prepares graduates to address concrete political and policy challenges facing Nevada through data analysis and research. And this degree program advances INCHE goals by expanding access, improving student success, and meeting workforce needs. Currently, there are no other Bachelor of Science degree programs in political science in the Nevada System of Higher Education. And again, we expect modest but steady growth over the Bachelor of Science program, with some of the students who are currently in the Bachelor of Arts program moving over into this track if approved. We currently have faculty who are qualified and can teach the courses, so we do not expect an increase in resources needed to offer this degree.
Questions, comments from the committee? Vice Chair Downs.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Escada. So the current Bachelor's of Arts in Political Science probably just takes Math 120, is that correct?
Yes, Regent.
So the exposure they get to statistics, is it limited to just that which is contained within Math 120?
There are research analysis in the Bachelor of Arts program.
Okay.
But it is based on the statistics taught in those classes.
Okay. And you mentioned, so I was trying to read through the math sequence, and I see introductory statistics. Is that Stat 152, or is there another one they're going to create for that class?
It is that statistics program. Course, yes.
Okay. But with this, you said it could include calculus, the calculus series. Do your Bachelor of Science degrees all require at least Calculus 1?
Our Bachelor of Science degrees currently do require Calculus 1.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
So that would be part of this curriculum. I just wasn't seeing where it fell in, unless it's under quantitative reasoning under the first semester.
I apologize. I do not remember what semester, okay. But there is a calculus. There is calculus one in the sequence.
Okay, I'm not trying to grill you on that. I'm just curious.
No, I apologize. I do not remember.
Curiosity.
I do not remember the sequence, but I have looked through it, and there is calculus one is in the sequence.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Any other? Regent Brown.
Thank you so much, Regent Brown, for the record. This feels like a really interesting way to engage the community on campus. Are there any plans to have professors of practice come in and speak to the students?
Thank you for the question, Regent Brown. Yes, and typically for these classes, we will not only bring professors of practice to be part of a course, but actually to teach course, people with expertise and who have worked in these areas to come in and teach special topics courses. Absolutely.
That's good to hear, because I do feel something specifically like this. It is important to get folks that do it day in and day out to come in and not just teach the practicality, but teach the actual execution. I know if I was a student, I would definitely would have. I was a political science student, but I would have taken this emphasis for sure.
Thank you, Regent Brown. We are always looking for ways to bring in not only people who are practitioners, that bring in the state of the art into the field to make sure our students see that in their coursework.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think the more hands-on, the more when they actually go to do an externship or an internship, right, they've already seen it firsthand, and they don't just have to talk about it in theory, but they can talk about it in practicality. So that's wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Regent Brown, it's never too late to enroll at the University of Nevada.
I'll go get my second bachelor's. How about that?
We would love to have you.
Any other questions, comments from the committee? None seen, none stated. Thank you, Provost Thompson. I'm going to introduce a motion on the table.
Move to approve agenda item number 8.
Regent Brown.
I'll second that.
Regent O'Carroll. Questions, comments? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Any opposed? None stated. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you. You look good in silver and blue. Come on now. We're off some of that red. All right, we're going to move on. Bring a little levity to this committee. Here we go. We're going to move on to agenda item number 9, which is a program proposal for an associate arts in secondary education. And it's going to be presented here at Great Basin College. And this is a agenda item for a possible action. Please.
Good morning. For the record, Sarah Negrete. I currently serve as the Vice President of Student and Academic Affairs here at Great Basin College. The AA in Secondary Education establishes a formal pathway for students at GBC who are interested in pursuing a teaching degree in secondary education, particularly in subject areas not currently offered at GBC. Recently, our bachelor's degree in biology was deactivated, and yet we still want to provide a seamless opportunity for students to become teachers in that area, and providing this formalized AA package allows for seamless transfer to other NSHE institutions to take those upper division content-specific courses.
Wonderful. Very succinct. Thank you very much. Are there any questions for the committee? None seen. This is seamless. It was great. This was a really well done proposal, and I really do appreciate it.
Thank you.
One question, Regent Batista? Oh, you're chomping over there. All right. May I make an introduction for a motion on the table?
Motion to approve action item number 9.
Thank you.
I'll second the motion.
Thank you, Regent Batista. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well done. That was a very great proposal. One of the items I've really been looking forward to is the Foster Youth Fee Waiver and the program report. And today is an information item only of the program. And I believe we see down there in Reno. Thank you so much. If you could please introduce yourself and continue, we'd greatly appreciate it.
Laura Obrist, for the record. I am the system level representative for the NSHE Fostering Success Initiative. Thank you to the Regents for the opportunity to present today. I will be covering two topic areas today, which are outlined in much greater detail in the report. First, I will be talking about the progress of the fee waiver program over the past 7 years. Second, I'm going to share some major highlights of the system-wide Fostering Success Initiative work over the past 2 years since I presented on the second biennial report. The first thing we're going to cover is the growth of the fee waiver program. Sorry, I just realized I need to say next slide. Can you go to slide 3, please? The others didn't have anything but titles.
SCS, are you with us on this?
There we go. Thank you. Okay, so the NSHE Fostering Success Initiative was launched when the board unanimously approved the Foster Youth Fee Waiver in September 2018. So we are now at the 7-year mark for this crucial piece of financial aid for our students who have experienced foster care. Nevada was the 29th state to implement a college financial assistance program specifically for students with a background in foster care. As of 2022, there are now an estimated 37 statewide college financial assistance programs dedicated to college students with foster care histories. The national landscape has not changed since I last presented to you. In approving the fee waiver, the board laid a foundation for our higher education system to more effectively support these students. Following the board's lead, a committed statewide network of ENCHI employees and community partners is working collaboratively to achieve the initiative's ultimate vision of building a comprehensive, sustainable, and permanent education support system for Nevada students who have experienced foster care, from secondary education completion to post-secondary education attainment to a career path. With this vision in mind, the initiative's mission is to more effectively recruit, support, and retain students who have experienced foster care, and the fee waiver is a key component in achieving that goal. Next slide, please. The ENCHI Foster Youth Fee Waiver policy permits qualifying undergraduate students attending any ENCHI institution to register for eligible courses without being charged base course registration or certain laboratory fees. The total amount of the course fees waived is not reduced by any other forms of financial aid that the student receives. With the majority of their course fees covered, this means that students can use their additional financial aid to cover other necessary school and living expenses, such as room and board, books and supplies, and/or transportation. To initially qualify for the ENCHI Foster Youth Fee Waiver, a student must meet all four program requirements listed here. A student only needs to complete the fee waiver form and submit it to the institution once. However, in order to retain eligibility past their first semester as a fee waiver recipient, the student must meet the three continuing eligibility requirements listed here. There is more detailed information in the fact sheet I linked on the slide. Next slide, please. Since the fee waiver policy was approved, ENCHI employees and community partners who are part of what is now known as the Nevada Fostering Higher Education Support Network have been working diligently to raise awareness of the fee waiver program throughout the state. The first entering cohort for this fee waiver was the 2018-19 academic year, when we had 38 students utilize the fee waiver statewide. The program has steadily grown since then, increasing unduplicated fee waiver recipients by 292.1%, with the total number of recipients increasing to 149 statewide. Most recently, between the 2023-24 and 2024-25 academic years, the number of students awarded fee waivers grew by 8.8%. Next slide, please. In terms of cost, the total cost of the fee waiver across the system started at $106,361 in the 2018-19 academic year. The annual amount spent across the system increased to $645,222 by the 2024-25 academic year, with the total fees waived increasing by 14% over the prior year. Next slide, please. The remaining data that we will be covering on fee waiver recipients includes demographics, persistence in graduation rates, and credentials earned. First, I'm going to go over two types of demographic information on our fee waiver recipients for the most recent academic year that we have data for, which is 2023-24. As far as race ethnicity, the distribution of fee waivers based on student race and ethnicity indicates that the population of recipients is generally reflective of the overall population on the campuses. Next slide, please. The other type of demographic data that we analyzed for the fee waiver recipients was income level. Because recipients are required to file a FAFSA, income information is available for all recipients up through the 2023-24 academic year. Data collected from the campuses for required reporting demonstrates that, as intended, the program is reaching students with very high financial need. As you can see, this data is compelling because the median annual income of our 2023-2024 fee waiver recipients was just $2,164, with 82% of recipients having an annual income below $15,000. Next slide, please. We also examined fall-to-fall persistence rates for fee waiver recipients. Looking at students who received the fee waiver in a fall semester and enrolled the following fall or earned a degree at any NSHE institution. Fall-to-fall persistence data on foster youth fee waiver recipients illustrates that in most years, between two-thirds and three-quarters of the recipients persisted. These persistence rates are relatively on par in many instances with fall-to-fall persistence rates for the general NSHE student population, especially when you consider the education opportunity gap that students with a background in foster care face, which includes being more likely than their non-foster care-involved peers to attend school part-time in order to obtain enough work hours to support themselves. Next slide, please. This table focuses on fee waiver recipient graduation data. Because 2018 to 19 was the first academic year of the fee waiver program, and the latest available graduate data is as of June 2024, numerous fee waiver recipients have yet to graduate with a degree or certificate. The table reflects the percentage of fee waiver recipients in each of the six academic years tracked thus far who graduated with a certificate, associate degree, or bachelor's degree by June 2024. It's important to note that not enough time has elapsed since the program's inception to report the percentage of fee waiver recipients who graduate in common time increments, such as 150% of degree time frame. However, there has been a notable increase in the number of fee waiver recipients who have graduated since the 2023 report, with the graduation rates for the students who received the fee waiver within the first 4 years of the program's inception increasing between 7.9 and 14.6% over the last 2 years. Next slide, please. This final data table examines the number and types of credentials earned by fee waiver recipients thus far. In the first 6 years that the fee waiver was offered, we saw 7 completed skills certificates, 53 completed associate degrees, and 87 completed bachelor's degrees. Additionally, the number of credentials earned by fee waiver recipients increased from 26 to 151 between the 2023 and 2025 reporting periods. And while the NSHE Foster Youth Fee Waiver only covers the cost of undergraduate coursework, the data shows that there have been 4 master's degrees earned by former fee waiver recipients over the last 2 years. It is important to note that if a student earned more than one credential at an NSHE institution, only the highest credential earned is reflected in this table. Next slide, please. Next, I'm going to talk a little bit about the collaborative statewide initiative work. Next slide. Good job. We're there. Stay there. As a result of the fee waiver approval and establishment of the initiative, NSHE was approached by the Walter S. Johnson Foundation and invited to apply for an initial one-year $200,000 grant, which was approved. We were then able to apply for and secure 2 subsequent grants from the foundation for a total of $1.2 million in private grant funding over 6 years, ending on June 30, 2025. The funding assisted with creating my role in a system-level student worker position, as well as funding other needs, such as professional development opportunities for NSHE employees and community partners. My role is dedicated to achieving the initiative's mission in collaboration with the statewide Nevada Fostering Higher Education Support Network, a coordinated statewide network of NSHE student leaders with foster care histories, NSHE institution employees, and other key stakeholders. My role is tasked with leading the network, particularly the core members who make up the Nevada Fostering Higher Education Committee, in the development and implementation of effective post-secondary education support practices that are formulated to assist young people who have experienced trauma, educational instability, inadequate financial resources, and limited support systems. Our 2 main priorities are increasing financial aid access and utilization, and improving and expanding wraparound support. Next slide, please. The Walter S. Johnson Foundation has also directly awarded grants totaling $1,805,000 to 3 of the NSHE institutions. UNLV has been awarded a total of $800,000. UNR has been awarded a total of $450,000. And TMCC has been awarded a total of $555,000 to establish campus-based support programs dedicated to students who have experienced foster care. Between the system and institution-level grants, NSHE has received a total of $3,005,000 in seed funding from the foundation to help us launch a stronger support system for students with foster care histories. Next slide, please. Now I'm going to share the initiative's progress highlights over the past 2 years since the second report was presented in September 2023. There are four key focus areas that our work falls into. Next slide, please. The first area is focused on student voice and leadership, which is particularly important for this population because they have spent their lives in situations and systems that have given them very little autonomy and a limited voice in decision-making that directly impacts them, often long-term. Therefore, we know that student support programming only works if it is student-led and or informed. As a result, a student-led and or informed approach is woven through all of our initiative work, meaning that student input and participation is always welcome and highly encouraged, including through formal student leadership roles. The system-wide peer and community educator role is a notable example of authentic student input and participation. In the 2020 to 21 academic year, NSHE utilized some of the grant funding to establish the role, which was a part-time student position that has worked closely with me in the chancellor's office, providing outreach and training across the state. The role was designed to give a new student the opportunity each year, and we have had four NSHE students hold the role over the 5 years that it existed, two students from UNLV and two students from UNR. The role was continuously filled through May 2025, and if future funding allows, the hope is that the student worker position will return. The initiative was also able to add a second student leadership role during the 2023 and 2024 calendar years through the iFoster Jobs Program. The Chancellor's Office established a memorandum of understanding with iFoster to serve as a host site for the program's inaugural and second years for one part-time AmeriCorps member who was an NSHE student or recent graduate. The same UNLV student who served in the role in 2023 continued in the role for the 2024 calendar year after graduating from UNLV. NSHE was unable to host a member in 2025 due to some changes in the program structure and budget. The same was true for UNLV, which previously hosted two members per year. But the initiative continues to refer eligible students to that program for entry-level employment support. Next slide, please. The second focus area is about building and maintaining a cohesive statewide network that collaborates and is committed to learning about the unique circumstances, challenges, and needs of students who have experienced foster care in order to better support them. The fifth and sixth annual initiative retreats are a major example in this area. During all six retreats we've held so far, members of the statewide committee worked collaboratively to build a more cohesive statewide learning community focused on supporting students who've experienced foster care with accessing and thriving in college, learned from student leaders with lived expertise in foster care and the professionals who serve them, and discussed and co-developed collective priorities for the subsequent year. Another example here is the NSHE Fostering Success Champions quarterly roundtables, which I started in February 2023. They provide a quarterly professional development group space for the campus-based staff and faculty at the NSHE institutions, who I refer to as our champions. Next slide, please. Our third focus area is system-level outreach and the development and provision of resources. First, knowing the NSHE students who have experienced foster care, their support people, the institutions, and the initiative's community partners need reliable information about the post-secondary education processes, resources, and support specific to the student population. The initiative has worked to create, improve, and expand electronic reference materials and an online and social media presence that will better serve the educational best interests of students with foster care histories. For example, in May 2023, the initiative launched its first issue of the system-wide initiative newsletter to improve and expand upon existing efforts to ensure that our students, employees, and community partners are well informed about key resources and developments. In addition, fall 2023 system-wide student needs survey results were provided to the Nevada Fostering Higher Education Committee at the 2023 retreat, and a panel of lived experience professionals presented crucial best practice information to them at the 2024 retreat. To assist NSHE institution employees and community partners in more effectively understanding the unique circumstances, challenges, and needs of Nevada college students with foster care histories. Next slide, please. Our final focus area is institution-level capacity building, and there has been a lot of recent development. While all of our schools are working to build stronger support systems for students with foster care histories, our most notable growth in this area has been at our three schools that have established campus-based support programs dedicated to this population. UNLV launched ENSHE's first full-time position and campus-based support program, known as the Fostering Scholars Program, in fall 2021, combining internal funds with private grant funding support from the Walter S. Johnson Foundation. The program serves students who were in foster care at age 13 or older, regardless of fee waiver eligibility, as program capacity allows, and the program has grown exponentially since its inception. Aside from the full-time program coordinator position, currently held by Kiva Francis, their third private grant is helping to fund enhanced student programming and dedicated scholarships for program participants. Fostering Scholars has also continued their internal programming funding sustainability efforts, as well as working very hard to identify, pursue, and secure additional external funding opportunities. They continue to utilize support from one dedicated graduate assistant position for students with foster care histories, as well as two Master of Social Work practicum student positions. UNR launched the second campus-based program, known as Fostering the Pack, in spring 2022. It serves fee waiver eligible students enrolled at UNR, as well as supporting prospective UNR students who've experienced foster care with their college transition. The program, overseen by Dr. James Beatty, has continued to maintain a steady number of participants as it has evolved. The program has consistently utilized 1 to 2 part-time staff positions, in addition to peer mentorship to support its participants, utilizing seed funding from the Walter S. Johnson Foundation and some internal funding. UNR was just invited to apply for their third private grant. Finally, TMCC officially launched their Fostering College Success program in spring 2023 after a part-time Fostering College Success advocate, Annalisa Walker, was hired in August 2022. The program, overseen by Yvonne Allen, serves current and prospective TMCC students with foster care histories, regardless of fee waiver eligibility. The program has substantially grown in student numbers and services provided over the past 2 years, and their third private grant will help accommodate the program's continued growth. Next slide. That is all of the updates I have for you. Do you have any questions for me?
Just a quick comment. That was fantastic. Wonderful information. And you provided great statistics and numbers of the benefits of this program. That is as big as it gets in regards to the underrepresentation and the opportunities for the foster youth in our community and throughout the state. Questions on the committee? Please, Regent Del Carlo.
I have both comments and some questions. So, Laura, thank you so much. I think you've been with this program since its beginning, correct?
That is correct.
Yes. Thank you for all the work you're doing. And I know I am the only regent that was here in 2018 when we approved this. And I was so happy to do it. I think at the time we were about the 30th state in the nation. And now I think it looked like you're up to 37 states. But I really, really believed in this program. And I knew that these young students and people had no choice. It's not their own not to be with a mom and a dad and in a secure environment and to be out of the system at 18. And sometimes the day they turn 18, those foster parents literally kick them out because they're not being paid anymore. We had students tell us that at TMCC, yeah. Which really broke my heart. But this gives these kids a real great chance. But it all comes down to money, too. I know I added up what we have spent as a system. It's $2,818,946. And this is, I believe, an unfunded mandate. And have we, I just can't remember. I thought that we had gotten some money from the legislature in different sessions. And I was talking to our chair. We couldn't remember if we'd gotten any money at the last session. Because this is another... You know, we're going to be talking on our agenda, I think it's Friday, no, maybe tomorrow or today, about the need to possibly raise tuition or find some more resources. So can you address that first? where we are financially?
Laura Oberst. Yes. Laura Oberst for the record. First, thank you, Chair Arriscada and Regent Del Carlo, for your support. I really appreciate that. Regarding the funding, so I think there may be a little bit of confusion, but in terms of the cost, so we have gotten private grant funding, and the numbers that you see on slide six are what we've spent each year. And so, if you calculate that, I haven't added that up, then that would be the number in terms of the fee waiver that the institutions are internally waiving. The private grant funding was covering my role for the first 6 years and then has covered the vast majority of the wraparound support work thus far on the campuses. There has been a little bit of internal investment from the campuses, but in comparison to the grant funding, it's been pretty minimal. If there's more information that you would like, I'd be happy to get that for you as well. I will say that this is a really small population with a very high financial need across the board compared to maybe other populations. So the cost overall for this waiver is definitely a lot lower than some of the others, but I realize that money is always a concern that we have, and it's a concern for me too. So.
Thank you, but so do you know if the legislature has funded any of that? And Alejandro, did we get any funding for it in the last session?
We did not.
I didn't think we did. So this is just another, I mean, I really believe in this program, don't get me wrong, but there's a cost to everything. I mean, $645,322 total system-wide is a lot of money that, I mean, and then you have got the breakdown, of course, what the institutions have to come up with. I mean, of course they support these students, and we should be supporting these students, but I hope in the future that we continue to ask the legislature for some help on this.
Yeah, I agree. I think that is definitely a goal that we've had the whole time and continue to have. So I think the hope is that we will get some money at some point for not only this waiver, but others as well, including the ones that the legislature has put into place.
And my other comment was I added up how many students over the course of this have gotten, I appreciate the slide, some kind of degree, whether it was a skill certificate all the way up to one person got a master's, which is just phenomenal. So with 151 students, but just think of the impact this has on those students and their life ahead. They're never going to be on the welfare rolls or anything. They'll be able to all go out and get decent paying jobs and be productive members of society, plus all the social things you're going to feel knowing that you're valued by society. So what we're doing is really, I call it the Lord's work. So I really appreciate this update, and I know my colleagues and I all support this program and these students. And maybe at a future, I'd love to hear one of these students, if you could find one at a future meeting. I'll ask for this in new business. I would love to have them come back and tell us how this program has impacted them. So
I know, Laura Oberst for the record. Yes, I know that we have students that would be happy to do that.
Okay.
That really benefited. Yes, so be happy.
Because I know when we passed this, Chancellor Riley, Tom Riley was our chancellor at the time, and he had done some focus groups with students on the campuses and invited some of the regents to go with him and hear the stories firsthand. And you have to hear it firsthand from these students, because it just changes how you think about things. And most people just don't know that these kids are just really left on their own at 18. And it's a cruel world out there.
Yes.
So thank you. Thank you for your dedication and passion, too, for this program and the continuity that you have put into it. I know you have to believe in your heart for this to continue, too.
Yes, I do. Thank you so much for your support over the years, Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you.
Beautifully said. Thank you, Regent Del Carlo. And one of the items that just really popped out to me was, slide number five, where you're identifying the number of students that could possibly come out and do a testimony at the podium. We have 152 students as of the 2024, and the year it's changed up by 10% since then. So there are a copious amount of students that would have the capability of providing an inside detail of their journey to academia. Please, Regent Brown.
Thank you so much. And thank you for the presentation. I want to echo what my colleagues were saying, because not only do I think higher education gives every student an opportunity, but we are literally changing lives in the opportunities that, you know, this is doing exactly what we're supposed to be doing, right? And yes, it is an unfunded mandate. We can add it to the list of things. But I think something that we could do is continue to have these presentations, talk about the impact, talk about, you know, where these students are now, how this has been helpful, and then we can tell a more holistic story of why these unfunded mandates are so crucial to who we are as a system, but why they hurt our institutions, bottom line, to be able to cover their expenses. So I'd be interested, this committee, working with not just your program, but several of these unfunded mandates, so we can start to tell a more holistic story. So thank you for bringing this to our attention and just letting us know that of the students that have taken advantage of this, I'm really hopeful that we've got some amazing stories to tell. Everybody's story is amazing, but it'd be nice to highlight a few. So thank you.
Thank you, Regent Brown.
And what you just stated right there, Regent Brown, highlighting those, that's why we're here. That's why we're all set on this dais. That's why we're in the audience today. Regent DeCarlo, you wanted to mention?
Yes, thank you, Chair Arascata. And to add on to what Regent Brown just said, too, I've got to sit in here thinking, you have to tell me, Laura, if we gone to the legislature with students and made any appeals, because if we haven't, shame on us for not doing that.
Laura Oberst for the record. No, we have not. I definitely our department has worked behind the scenes to help educate the legislature on not only the needs of various groups of students, not just the students in the program that I serve, but also, you know, how financial aid works and the importance of the design of certain programs in conjunction with just what the overall budget concerns are. Mm-hmm. I always think the voices of students are important, so if that's something we're able to do, I think that'd be great.
Okay, I totally agree. And, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over. This program started in 2018. It's now 2025. We'll have another legislative session in 2027. I think between today and the opening in 2027 that we need to put a full coordinated program on and bring lots of students. The legislatures really, really, just as we do, listen to our students. They can tell the story better than any of us. And so I would say to our legislative affairs chair, Alejandro, that we really need to do a big coordinated effort and really make this a priority for us in the 27th session. And I'm going to bring that up in new business, too. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Del Carlo. And thank you. Wonderful presentation. Truly appreciate it. And as you can see, it incited thoughts, incited emotions. It incited a swell of overwhelming support from this committee. So thank you.
Thank you. I really appreciate the support, Chair Arascata.
It's truly our pleasure and honor. Okay, we're going to move over to our next agenda item, and I believe that is new business. Agenda item number 11, Regent DeCarlo.
I have some new business. Okay. We haven't talked about this one for a long time, but I'd like to see us have an update on the MGM partnership and where we are with that. And we have lots of new regents that probably don't even know about that partnership. So that's my first one. And the second one would be to bring a foster student to an ARSA meeting to give testimony on the effects of this program for them. And then my third agenda item would be to have a coordinated effort between now and the legislative session in 2027 to bring a full picture with students to the legislature and discuss the unfunded mandate to request funding and the impact it has on these students' lives.
Perfect.
Thank you very much.
Any other new business? None seen. All right, we're going to move over to public comment. We're going to start a public comment at the items up over in Reno. Is there any public comment from the systems office in Reno?
There is no public comments at this time.
And there's nobody in Reno. And I do not see any. Are there any public comment in Las Vegas?
There are none at this time.
Thank you. Is there any public comment here at GBC? None seen. Thank you very much. It is 10:16.
SES, Chair Arascada.
SES, thank you. Councilor Nielsen, you caught me on that one.
There's no public comment at this time.
Thank you for bailing me out, SES. Excellent. At 10:16, the meeting is adjourned.